Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST. We are Baltimore Positive. This is our final, sadly, installment here from Jennings Cafe with Sarah Heminger of Thread, Don Moeller. She's dominated the conversation, hasn't she?
I hope so, and there's no doubt this will not be her only visit. I have to say to the Matt Gallaghers and the Ryan Shapiros and everybody
Second place, Gallagher, who everybody said to us.
Make sure you talk to Sarah Heminger. Boy, did they get that right. It's been a great day at Jennings Cafe. I remind everybody of our other sponsors,
sure,
State Fair and Fadley's. But, yeah, Sarah, as Nestor said, inspirational. The whole story is inspirational. I wonder if you can talk a little bit, because I think it puts a face on the kids again. Talk about Maurice. I was struck. I've seen you talk about Maurice. Tell folk, because Maurice seems to me to capture the essence of Thread. So can you share with us and the folks listening about Maurice and your relationship with Maurice?
Yes, so funny. We have next weekend his daughter is turning two, so I have to go to Chuck E. Cheese, which I hate. So I'm a little mad about that. I mean, Maurice is... a young man that I met 15 years ago. And at the time, through a number of things that had happened in his family, he was, let's just say, in the streets, on the streets, and really, as a result, struggling academically.
What does that mean, on the streets? Come on now, let's dig in. What's on the streets mean?
At times living on the streets, at times dealing drugs.
Using drugs too?
Not as sure about that.
So one doesn't mean the other, but never does. But that's interesting.
Maybe I'll ask him sometime.
Yeah. Well, there would be.
So you meet Maurice 15 years ago.
Yes, and you know, his initial way of engaging was similar to other young people in his cohort. You know, Judy is another young woman that I've been very close with, and. You know, he was doing his own thing. Like, he was doing his own thing. Or in Judy's case, like, she just was so depressed because in her instance, she had been physically abused by a close family member. And so she was so depressed and riddled with anxiety, she just couldn't get out of bed to go to school in the morning. So, like, you know, two individuals who are brilliant but were not making it to school for different reasons.
And these kids are 13 at the time, ish?
14. They were both 14, okay. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, like the way Thread kind of played out then is very similar to how it plays out now. And so I would do things with both of them. I would give Maurice rides to school. I would give Judy rides home from school. Very different individuals. He's very charismatic and outgoing, and she was very quiet. I'm a severe introvert, so I found it really difficult to bridge a conversation with her. But what happened with that first cohort is we found our way through, whether it was in the rides or, you know, our first camping trip was when there was 8 inches of snow on the ground. There's great stories to be told at another time about that trip, but
well, we're having you back, so that's okay.
But you know, as we began to kind of get to know one another, both of them started to really find their footing. And you know, Maurice and Judy both ended up graduating. Maurice went on to Coppin to get his college degree. Is now married with two young children, and works in security. Judy. Went on to Wesley College, became a nurse, just finished her master's, and is now working at Bayview. So, you know, the thing, you know, I talk about the two of them, they're special, and yet they're not unique in the sense that that is the Thread story. Those are our young people. That is our talent base. Like, is these incredible young people who, you know, with some additional support, like, can easily do these things, right? The thing, though, that is, I think, less maybe on the surface that is important to share is, like, how did we get there? It goes back to, like, okay, so you give someone a ride to school, or you give someone a ride home from school, or you go camping, but it's, like, how are you showing up in those spaces? So with both of them, it was different. You know, like, on the car rides, Judy and I would argue about my clothes, because mostly my shoes, because I never wear heels, and... She was like Rockports are unacceptable. Maurice and I often argued about music.
You both ended up liking Motown. Is that what you said it on Motown?
We love Motown. Right. Like, and the two, we have so many funny videos of the two of us dancing to Motown that are just ridiculous.
But you also argued, and I thought it was fascinating, maybe tell our listeners, you also argued over whether or not he could carry a gun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to have some boundaries. Like, you can't bring a gun in my car. So that was, like, that was, you know, those are the kinds of things we would talk about very actively. And so he didn't. But the thing is this, is, like, over time, a lot of those conversations turned deeply personal for me. So, you know, in Judy's case, she had struggled with mental illness. And I remember when we were at her college graduation, her saying to me, you know, I asked her, like, what type of nurse are you planning to be? And she said, I'm going to be a mental health nurse. I said, that's fascinating. Why that? You know, and I've lost three of my family members to suicide. So, I have, you know, experienced a lot of loss in that way. And she said, because, you know, in every other illness, when you get sick, people just flock to you. But when you have a mental illness, everyone runs away. Right. And she's like, I want to be the last person remaining. And so when you think about, like, the conversations in the car, oftentimes they were about things like whether or not you can bring your gun. They were about things like, you know, how are you doing? As I got older, Judy and I had some things in common. We both really struggled to have children, and that was really, really difficult. So sometimes, like, the interactions would be, you know, as we got older, at a coffee shop and without any talking, because one of us had just lost a child, and it was like everything we could do to just be out in public, period. So I think about, you know, fast forward a little bit, like 3 years ago, I had a really bad car accident and I had a severe concussion. I didn't really understand much about concussions, ironically. But the impact of it escalated over the course of a few months. I ended up losing, like, I think 30 plus pounds. And one day I was just driving home from work and my body was just completely out of whack. Because I had migraines every day, I couldn't eat. And I was trying to do Thread, right, and be a parent. And I just had a massive panic attack. And I had no idea what was happening to me. I was so scared. I was so embarrassed. I didn't know if I was dying. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And so when you think about, like, what does this really mean? It's like, in that moment, I have so many people that I know. But it's like, who do I feel comfortable calling in that moment? And I was especially afraid because my husband was about to go on a way because his grandfather died. He's going to go to the funeral. And so I needed some way to take care of my daughter when I was a complete disaster. So I called Judy and I called Maurice. Wow. And so when you think about, like, who was rallying around me in, like, my moment of complete embarrassment, humiliation, and desperation, it was the two of them. Like, Judy came over, she brought her daughter Linda.
Amazing.
They stayed
story.
For the weekend. Like, we have these pictures of Linda and Evie, my daughter, from that weekend that, like, are so special. And I was like a disaster, but, like, she was there for me. And so it goes back to, like, who are the people who, like, you can call at 3 a.m. And for me, that's Judy. That's Maurice. It's Maurice's wife, Stephanie. It's their children. And I know that my daughter is growing up and going to feel the same way about their children.
David Brooks, who's giving, who's receiving.
Yeah.
And he writes that. I mean, there's a, you what? Talk about a moment. I think you wake up in a hospital bed. And Maurice is in the hospital with your family.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of weird hospital moments. Yeah, so that time, so during one of my losses, I had an ectopic pregnancy and didn't realize I was pregnant and collapsed, was bleeding internally. Funny story there. My husband thought I just hadn't eaten enough that day, so he cooked a full spaghetti dinner before we called the ambulance, which is still, like, a little bit of a thing.
Ryan, Ryan, come on there.
Yeah, he got my blood sugar.
That was Ryan's spaghetti.
No, I needed 6 blood transfusions. Thanks so much. But no, like, when you go to the hospital and, you know, a doctor looks at you and says, like, you need to call them because there is not a good chance you're going to wake up from this surgery. Like, that's like a thing, you know? Like, I remember looking at Ryan and actually ironically feeling like at peace, just knowing that like I had done everything at each moment that I could do it to the best I could do it with him. I told him he has to be sure to remarry because he can't live alone. He'd be a train wreck. But you know, when I woke up from that surgery and I think about like who was in that room, it was Maurice. It was board members. It was staff members. It was volunteers. My husband had just resigned from his job and was transitioning to actually work at the school system. And so he stayed with me in the hospital for a week, but then really couldn't take care of me and I didn't have family in the area. So who did I move in with? I moved in with a board member, Barbara Shapiro, who literally for a month nursed me back to health and would have people to her home every day. Like she like held court so that I would have people to talk to and things, you know, so that is a family.
Well, talk to us. If you mentioned Barbara Shapiro, we had Ron on last week and told him you were coming on. He got so excited because his son, David, is evidently involved in the national mentoring network. I know it's not totally exactly what Thread
Mentoring.org,
does.
I learned.
But talk to us about your relationship or interactions with David Shapiro, because I know you all are sort of kindred spirits.
He is one of the most warm people I have, and authentic and just incredible human beings I've ever met. I first heard him give a talk years ago, and then we've gotten to know each other since. I actually just talked to him yesterday. But he is really, you know, focused on, I think we share a common belief that relationships are what all human beings need. And he is working on the national stage to ensure that relationships get built and relationships across lines of difference in a way that's transformative for everyone. And he's lived that himself. You know, David, the young person that he's worked with, I think is actually now living with him. So it's something that's like deeply personal and very genuine.
And doing great work. So again, this is building up nationwide. Locally, we had Dick Cass on, and Dick was very proud of the as I said, we haven't had no one on that doesn't speak about Thread. Dick was really excited about
the... We're in front of the Ravens
year. Yeah, here we go.
See, we're in Cage, we're in Paradise, Maryland.
Dick Cass, Kevin Byrne, John Harbaugh, Eric DaCosta, take note. But Dick was very proud of the Ravens' involvement with Thread. Talk to us about how that happened and what it is. What are the Ravens doing with Thread?
They have been the most spectacular partners. We've been so, so lucky. Football has like been an integral part of Thread from the very beginning. On that first camping trip that started our annual football tournament, which was always the young people against the adults for a long time, we had 10 years straight where we won every year, which is a big deal because especially with that first cohort, six of the young people in that cohort were on the state championship football team.
Nice.
So this is a source of pride for us, aging folk. But anyway,
so what you're saying is you have some burgundy and gold. You have some Dunbar swag in your closet. Is what you're saying?
My husband thought he had lost his Dunbar baseball cap and thought he was going to also lose his mind. Like our house is full of it.
Go Poets.
Yeah, go Poets. Yeah, I mean, what happened is actually after the kind of events of April of 2015, there was a lot of help that poured in. People brought bottled water, food. And ironically, what happened was that actually felt to a lot of young people like a tsunami, where things swept in, and then as soon as like the news crews left, people swept out.
Right.
And so the damage was actually caused on the way out because it left a lot of our young people and their families feeling like, okay, we're okay to matter when the cameras are on, but do we really? Like, where are the jobs? Where's the transportation?
By the way, as a citizen, I feel that way with this guy coming up from D.C. and plopping down in East Baltimore. Like I feel that way. Certainly, I think every citizen feels that way. A little like, all right, y'all came here, you kicked us around, you set us on fire, and now we're gonna have to figure out how to put it back together, and we will. I mean, that's why we're here.
That's right. And so, like, this is actually Maurice's idea. We were just sitting on my porch after this all happened, and Maurice was like, explaining how he felt. There was a bunch of us sitting out there, and he's like, look, it would have just been helpful if everyone had gotten the phone number of one other person they had never met and just agreed to talk to him on the phone once a month for a year. Like, how would that have changed our ability to, like, see ourselves in one another? And I'm like, well, we can't do over April, but maybe we can do something else. So this started first with a series of what we call conversation thread, where we gathered people at 100 different locations, 10 people on one night, to a diverse group of people, to just talk. Because, again, I think people want to be in relationship with each other. We start with that assumption. And it's more because of how we've been structurally divided, people don't even know where to start. And so we wanted to create an easy place for people to just plug in to, like, get to know people who were different than them or perceived to be different than them. And that evolved into what is now Game Day with the Ravens. So what we learned is that jumping into a dinner table conversation around these heavy topics, race, class, oftentimes is just a bit, it can be overwhelming if you've never done it before, right? It could be uncomfortable. Sure. And we want to be uncomfortable, but not unsafe. And so in partnering with the Ravens, Game Day Conversations is really about, like, cheering for the home team, cheering for Baltimore City, watching the game together, and then...
I do all of that already. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. All right. And Josh Charles had this, like, genius idea that... To be able to facilitate the conversation but a slightly different way, play trivia on the commercials. So we created a trivia deck that's about Baltimore City's history, the Ravens, and Thread. And what it did was create entry points for people to have conversations. So, for example, we might ask, like, what is Justin Tucker's hobby was one of the questions last year. And some people knew, some people didn't know. But if you didn't know, everyone, when you said opera singer, everyone was like, what?
Right.
And you're like, why are you surprised by that?
Right.
And that gets you into this very...
Well, he doesn't look like one, right?
Right. So now all of a sudden we just landed on a conversation about bias that has nothing to do with race and class. It just has to do with your bias towards football players.
But did you all come... Right? Do you come together and watch the games together? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Game Day, yeah.
So last year we did it, and we plan to do it this year on a single day.
Okay.
At different locations across the city. Last year we had 23 different locations where we had parties.
It was the Chargers
parties.
Game. You did the Chargers. He told us.
So intense. It was so
intense. That was a big game.
Oh,
that?
My gosh.
I do.
Yeah.
I was losing my mind running around.
So you go to a
screaming.
Bunch of locations.
Yeah, and you just watch the game together, and you get to meet new people. You get to cheer for the home team. And then on the commercials, you're playing this trivia game. There's prizes and things like that. It's open to the public. It's free. But it enables you to kind of enter a conversation. And the beauty of it is, like, some of the conversations would get kind of heated, but then the game came back on. So there was this beautiful...
Stop.
Yeah.
Lamar's got the ball.
We got to watch the game. Yeah. But that was actually helpful because, and then some of the groups actually continued to watch, you know, like, to get together and to spend time together. But it was some of the informal things that came from that space. We had one young person who met someone who ended up giving him a job this summer. So it's those sorts of loose ties also that are extremely helpful when you're thinking about, like, how to create a new social fabric. So we're super excited to do this again.
Amazing.
I get my question in.
I know. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
We've done an hour and 20 minutes.
Amazing.
I want to take this all the way back to the beginning, all right? So I know
not
what it
sorry.
Is now. No, I know what it is now. Okay. I need to know, and I always say that, Don, I want to write a book one day about first look. The first time you looked at Ryan, that's the first time you looked at Maurice, what was the first thing?
Oh,
so, but the first time that you envision what this is.
Great question.
Because when you meet Maurice 15 years ago, it wasn't like, I got 15 years of success, and here's Maurice, and here's Judy, here's my story. It was more like, who's this chicken? What does she want? What is this thing? And what's this concept? What was this a cocktail napkin? I mean, where did the... Because clearly you have some organizational structure in your background the same way that he was a high school principal, right? So you... And I ran a company. So you have that. How does that go into the relationships of Thread? Because there is so much of this sort of neuroscience involved in what, I guess, the background of what you've done. But when did this concept become the concept? And over 15 years, how much different is it than the cocktail napkin when you met Maurice? Or what I call the cocktail napkin. You tell me what that was.
Yeah. So maybe the better analogy, or the analogy that might be more accurate, is the car rides with my parents, where they'd ask us about what do we think about buying this car, our family finances.
That you had a stake in an involvement.
Yeah. So, like, our history, there was no master plan. There was no initial goal. What I did on the very first day was, first of all, I tried calling Dunbar. I don't even know how many times. No
so
one would
just
respond to me.
You don't have a corporate. You're just a do-gooder at that moment.
I didn't even know what a 501c3 was. I was not a do-gooder. I was like a lonely person with no friends that just wanted some friends. Like, literally. Like, I just thought, like, here I was in grad school.
Your husband was in Annapolis, correct?
He was at the Pentagon at the time.
Okay,
yeah, so
he's in D.C.
This is in graduate school.
In Baltimore at Hopkins.
Yes, doing a PhD. They used to make us take a year of medical school, and I was just struggling to make friends. I'm introverted, so like,
as we can tell, it's been hell getting
close. Trust me, ask people who know me.
So you're there. I want you. This is keep going with that
because I'm trying to understand.
You're an introvert. You're at Hopkins. You're lonely.
I'm glad you didn't tell me this in the beginning now because then I feel
and
like I know
you're driving by Dunbar one day. According to what I read, you say. Wow.
I'm going to walk in.
No, I literally am just like, I look at the Hopkins buildings because at that time there was all this building going on. It's like, it felt like things were just like being erected out of dust daily, you know? And then like, I look over and notice a high school. I had driven the same way every day and never noticed there was a high school. And then I noticed there's what I thought to be public housing across the street. And the thought that crossed my mind wasn't like, oh, the disparity and the people who need help. It was the thought that crossed my mind was, oh, I bet there's people like Ryan in that high school, and I bet they might want to be my friend.
Okay.
So, like, it had nothing to do with doing good. It had to do with helping myself.
Giving and receiving.
It had to do with, like, I wanted to be part of a community. I had never really been part of a community other than my family. And so when I entered that space, you know, when I had that first day with the young people, all I knew to do was what my mom and dad had done, which is I said to them, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm thinking we could have these three buckets of things we do, academics, community service, and team building. What do you think? And we spent that whole first conversation just making lists. Like, the napkin was a chalkboard, and it was with a group of young people. And those
It always
buckets,
starts there. I call it a cocktail napkin.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a whiteboard.
It's
the chalkboard.
It's right. Where's the North Star? What are we trying to do here?
But
you were trying to find something that made you whole.
Yeah, okay. But the napkin was not by myself. That's right. The critical thing. The napkin was with a group of people, and that has been the case throughout our 15 years. All of the evolutions to our model, we didn't start out with four. We didn't start off with the concept of a thread family and a head of family and a grandparent. Like, all that evolved because we have these group spaces in Thread, and those spaces involve all of the individuals in Thread, young people, adults, and so it's in those spaces that the model has gradually evolved to where it is now.
All right. Well, the next time we get together, and there will be a next time, I want to pick it up, and if Don will let me, at that moment where you say, all right, I walk into Dundalk, and then every challenge that has been met for you to get to this group of four and this grandparent role and all of these roles, because this has been trial and error to so hopefully
totally.
More trial than error.
No, probably way more error than like that's what we're really I think if you were to like sum it up, like Thread is pretty good at failing. Like, and we're resilient. So like
But not failing twice the same way, maybe?
We try not to.
Fair enough.
Like, but that's the thing. I think like there's because we're not centered around accomplishment or a particular frame of success.
Nobody's getting a medal. They're getting a relationship.
Yeah. And same, like, as a organization, it really is about, like, one foot in front of the other. Can we be present and do what's right in this moment to the best of our ability? And then that has led us to where we are now. But none of this was ever envisioned. Like...
Well, it's amazing.
None of it.
None of it.
Before, yeah. And
none
before,
of it. I can't believe you're a Colts fan.
Before you get out of here.
I didn't say.
I feel more.
No, go ahead.
It's complicated.
I forgave the Ursays 10 years ago publicly. And Don's still wondering because a lot of people haven't. And I knew it would come back to us in some way. I knew Indianapolis
would give us something back. They've given us Sarah Heminger.
That's what they've
Two quick things before we allow you to run. One, I've noticed that you've been asked to replicate this in other cities. It makes us proud about our own city that you've resisted that. Why? Why have you resisted trying to expand it to other cities?
Just because we think we can have the biggest impact by first going deep in Baltimore. So I really genuinely believe that we can hit a tipping point in the city where we have created a set of relationships and a set of norms that has changed the culture of how the city behaves and interacts in a way that leads to not just a more equitable city, but then that leads to better education, better public health, less crime, because everyone is in it together and understands that like my ability to thrive is inextricably linked to yours. So I think we believe we can maximize our impact both on Baltimore, but also in the country by being a proof point that like this kind of society, that we can have a society that is not individualistic, a society that is not divided, a society that is not like we want Baltimore to demonstrate to our country, like what is possible.
It really is, isn't it, Sarah, about as I listen to you talk about the importance of us staying connected.
Yeah.
It really is about us all being connected and being all in it together.
Together.
So the next mayor calls you. We're going to leave with this. We ask folks, next mayor, he or she's elected, picks up the phone. He says, Sarah, what do I do? The next mayor calls you. What do you tell them? They say, Sarah, you're doing good things. I hear a lot about you. I just got elected. What should I be doing as the mayor of Baltimore to make this?
How can you help me?
How can you help me? What do we do?
That's a great question. I mean, I think change starts with individual people. So, you know, I think it's about first norming City Hall in a way that has a culture that reinforces a non-European dominant culture. So it's like, what is the culture of City Hall itself? And, you know, for me, that change has had to be like I am continually having to reflect and self-examine around like what are the behaviors I'm doing that are reinforcing the culture that I'm actually in the systems that I'm trying to deconstruct. So first, just like, do they have people that can support them in their own personal journey of growth? Right. So I always start at the personal level because I think also then modeling that was one of the most powerful things that a mayor could do. But, you know, I think it really is like looking for opportunities structurally to build relationships across lines of difference. And then there's also things just in terms of policies that there are policies that are continuing to reinforce a dominant culture construct. And so a lot of those need to be changed. That's not so much my lane, Thread's lane. So I might give the new mayor a list of people to call.
Okay.
But
Master's big on that. Surround yourself with the best and the brightest, and let's make a difference.
Yeah, but we might offer to the mayor to like help be their coach on their personal journey. Like that might be our value.
Well, if
add.
I'm the mayor, I won't be stealing $800,000. Integrity comes with the package.
Well,
kind of sort of deal.
Sarah, I cannot thank you enough. It's uplifting. It's hopeful. We believe the city of the future is bright, and we think that folks like you and others who are making a difference each and every day, actually going out doing the hard work. So,
what kind of tree would you be?
Okay, with a concern of being environmentally insensitive, I would want to be dust. Let me explain. Whatever kind of tree that then got turned into paper, that then got used up in some way, that then was like shred. Like, I just want to be used up when it's all said and done. I want to like have given everything I possibly can and like be fully used up and ready to go. So like
1972. I love that.
Well, what do you do to have fun though? Come on, what do you do? You can't work 190 million hours. What do you do to have fun?
Carol King.
What does Sarah Heminger do to have fun?
I like to play poker, so I'm in a couple of games that are all male, and I thoroughly enjoy taking all of their money.
How can you top that? Sarah Heminger, poker. Catch her on the next World Championship of Poker on ESPN.
I'm getting a Jennings burger, crab cake, something out here. Thank you for coming by. I feel like we're old friends. Is that part of the Thread?
Yes.
All right.
We're connected.
We're stuck together. Sarah Heminger from Thread. Learn more about all that they do. Follow up at Baltimore Positive.
Hey, Nestor, wait a minute. Tell them, too. Where do they go? If they want to get more information, people out there right now are going to want to volunteer. Where do they go?
Thread.org.
There you go. thread.org. Make a difference. Get involved. Baltimore Positive.
We will be back with Stuart Berger. We also have City Council President Brandon Scott joining us next week at Fadley Seafood on Thursday. Come down and say hello. I'm Nestor. He's Don. We're out at Jennings. We are Baltimore Positive at WNST.net.